He was despised and rejected, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we did not esteem him. Surely he has borne our griefs and has carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement for our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. Isaiah 53, verses 3 through 5. We're going to continue our journey to the cross, a retelling of the old story that truly never grows old. It's been good to look at this story in detail. Once again, as I've mentioned before, being a church of Christ, let us never forget what Christ went through to purchase his body, us, the redeemed. And so we're so thankful to be a part of his body. And so we come to the fourth part of the journey to the cross, and this being the judgment. The judgment. We come essentially to the last day of our Lord's non-resurrected life. And you know, we will all one day have a last day of our non-resurrected life as well. Though I am quite sure it will not be similar or the same to that day of Jesus and what it was for him. The judgment being the title here, it seems fitting. It fits together with what takes place here. It seems fitting to think also that Christ will one day judge all men. It's almost poetic in some ways because there was a day in which man judged him. Though man had absolutely no right to do so, yet he did so anyway. Both the Jews and the Romans were to blame in all of this. Even though when you read the text, there's this great sense that no one wanted to ultimately do the deed, to pull the trigger. The Jews would send him to Pilate, and Pilate would keep sending him back to the Jews. Back and forth, the Lord would go. And where we left off our story in John the 18th chapter last week, Pilate had given Jesus over to Herod. And Pilate perhaps hoped that Jesus was gone and gone for good. But as the story goes, here he comes back again. And there we see in John chapter 18, verse 39, Pilate then thinks of this next. He says, "You have a custom that I should release someone to you at the Passover. Do you therefore want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" You see, he had given them an option of an individual that they might select to be released from prison. And this was a common custom at this time. Most of the time, they would select a pool of prisoners that they might be in then to be able to choose from that pool. Pilate, though, you'll start to get the great inclination that he's trying everything he can to release Jesus. And so he selects one of the worst prisoners that he can think of, Barabbas. One who was a murderer, a robber, one who was guilty of sedition among the people. Surely, they wouldn't ask for Barabbas. And so he offers them this choice. And we see in verse 40, they make their choice. They all cried again, saying, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now, Barabbas was a robber. Have you ever seen someone do a double take before? Believe you me, Pilate would have been doing such at that time. Here he is again, trying his very best to avoid making a decision about Jesus Christ. And that's like many that we talk to today when you think about it. We talk to them about their souls. We talk to them about the truth. We talk to them about heaven and hell. We talk to them about the church that Jesus built. We talk to them about Jesus. And they want to avoid making a decision about Jesus. It's mighty inconvenient to the worldly life to make a decision about Jesus. And yet this story powerfully illustrates that every man cannot escape making some type of decision regarding Jesus and especially regarding His Word. Again, you're struck by the irony of the story, the frenzy of the Jews shuffling Jesus back and forth from one place to the next. Hurry, hurry! They want to get this passed as soon as they could because of their ceremonial rules that they didn't want to violate. And then you see the frenzy of Pilate as well as he's forced to deal with a man that he keeps proclaiming as innocent. And yet in the midst of it all, you're impressed by the great quietness and calmness and stillness of Jesus. And it reminds us also of the calm assurance that you and I can have when we do the will of God. That it brings a peace that surpasses all understanding. And those that are outside of God's will, those found fighting against God's will, they are tormented souls. Maybe not at the moment, and maybe not every day, but there it will be a day when they'll wrestle with their own conscience and feel the great sting and the discomfort it brings to be a sinner and to fight against God. Now, again, you might recall some of the previous lessons we've had so far, and we might think the beatings that Jesus has received is quite enough. He doesn't deserve any more, and that would be so. And yet, dear friends, you and I have seen nothing yet. We're about to witness torture take place. In John chapter 19, there, verse 1, as we continue to see Pilate's perpetual pickle that he is in, Pilate, verse 1, took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe. And they said, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they struck him with their hands. And Pilate would go out again and say to them, "Behold, I'm bringing him to you that you may know that I find no fault in him." Now, when you begin to combine some of the other accounts and see what is taking place here, again, you see that Pilate really hopes that this would appease the bloodlust of the Jews. Especially when you begin to understand what a Roman scourging was like. Make no mistake about it, this was torture. You know, you hear the old debate on the news today about, you know, torturing prisoners and waterboarding and these kinds of things. That couldn't hold a candlestick to what we see a Roman scourging was like. A Roman scourge was comprised of a man and sometimes two men. They were called lictors. And they would hold a whip that had a small wooden handle. And from it would come long lashes of leather. And in that leather were tied pieces of glass, pieces of metal, pieces of bone, and other objects that were designed to grab the skin when they hit the skin. And the person was tied to a post in such a way that their back might be taut so that it would inflict the most pain when the, sometimes referred to as the cat of nine tails, would come across the back, and then as they'd pull back, it would literally rip chunks of flesh off the person's back. Sometimes the one that was being examined in such a way would actually die from blood loss from the scourging. Remember, these were professionals. They knew how to skillfully deliver the blows with extreme force. And sometimes those blows and the very elements within that whip would penetrate the body, lacerate arteries, that literally you would see blood spurting with every heartbeat from the person. Penetrate kidneys. And they would sometimes just perish from the shock of the pain. They could go on as long as the Romans wanted it to go on. I had before you an edited picture. It just was too much to show of how torturous this would be. This picture goes on to reveal more of the flayed skin that would come off the back. It looks just tattered and an exposed rib. That's what a torture could do of this magnitude. And so Pilate brings this one before the crowd, pulverized, disfigured.